Welcome back, everybody. This is the first Oscar Talk of 2011. I led the podcast off with a little bit of Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross's rendition of In the Hall of the Mountain King, which kind of plays like a demented Jeopardy theme, which is pretty, which is kind of apt, I guess, this week. This is the last week of balloting coming up, and let's get down to the wire, I guess. We've got three of the major guilds that have announced so far. And let's just talk about those, I guess. First of all, right. how's your new year going?
I'm back in the fray. I mean, it's fun and it's intense. But I mean, I saw you at the, just this week we went over to sort of celebrate Robert Duvall's 80th birthday at the cement hand and feet ceremony over at the Grauman's Chinese. And we got to watch him hanging out with James Caan and Billy Bob Thornton and Andy Garcia. And I just got a kick out of it.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great time.
And I'm, assuming that he's a lock for a nomination for Get Low. Are you?
Yeah. I mean, I think it'll just be the SAG nominees in the lead actor category. I think that if there's changes, I think they'll be in the other categories.
Yeah, no, that seems pretty safe. I've just been running around like a crazy person, just a lot of stuff going on.
This is kind of the busiest frame, really. I mean, we've got two award shows
next
week.
We've only got a few more days. I mean, we've got the 14th is when the nomination ballots
are due. And then shortly after that, they're revealed. And this upcoming week, we've got the Golden Globes and the Critics' Choice Awards, and It's generally pretty hectic right about now. So
it's pretty wild. So the different guilds that weighed in. What was interesting about the art directors is that they went predictably with the bigger films, except for Get Low. But that's a period film.
Right. They've got 15 shots on goal in that guild with the three.
Yeah, so they've got period, they've got fantasy, and they've got contemporary. So, some of them will get VFX. The seven VFX, the short list was pretty predictable of what you'd expect. Inception, Tron, Alice in Wonderland, that kind of...
Well, I think Scott Pilgrim squeezing in was interesting.
That was surprising, yeah. Yeah.
And I do think Hereafter is a real dark horse there because...
That tsunami is incredible.
Yeah, and effects guys really do appreciate the work at the beginning there. And that's kind of, you feel Spielberg's influence in that sequence.
No question. So. It's not very, very Eastwood at all.
Yeah.
The sound, the sound awards were Black Swan, Inception, Shutter Island, The Social Network, and True Grit. Mm-hmm. Again, all of them on the top 10 list. I mean, it was interesting looking at the Gurus of Gold list because...
All of them on what top 10 list? I'm sorry.
For the Oscars.
Shutter Island. You said all of them on the top 10 list.
Not Shutter Island.
Well, that's what I think is cool, that Shutter Island managed to get nominations from both the Art Directors Guild and the Cinema Audio Society, the latter being a surprise, I thought. And
it's a beautifully made movie that doesn't work, in my humble op. I know you love it, and there are many...
Yeah, I'm not debating merit. I'm just talking about what we're seeing.
But we wouldn't be surprised to see Shutter Island getting some technicals.
I think sound is interesting. I would have expected an art director's thing, but I just think sound is an interesting nomination. Certainly not what I would have expected.
And somebody was questioning why The Social Network would get a sound nom, and there's amazing sound work in there.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
I put up an interview just recently with the editors, the sound mixers, and the composers about that film, and that's a great mix, so it's well deserved.
Just for that scene alone where they're in that rockin' nightclub and you can hear what they're saying, but you have to sort of lean in and listen, and it's really loud.
Yeah, and
it's
Fincher
incredible.
Fincher is very meticulous. I mean, he even wanted to get the sound of the flip-flops right on Eisenberg. I mean, he was
great.
Pretty meticulous about... He always is about sound in his movies, so...
He is. No, he's one of the best, so, yeah. What interested me this week was just the idea that at the what is at the bottom of the Oscar 10? Where is there possibility for movement?
Well, it's really interesting to me because, first of all, there are four movies that got each of the three big guilds to have been announced so far: SAG Ensemble, PGA, and WGA, and those are The Fighter, Kids Are All Right, The Social Network, and Black Swan.
And yet we're all saying King's Speech is the number one film.
Well, this is the thing. This is where I think it gets interesting. King's Speech obviously would have been nominated had it been eligible for WGA. It would be in this mix. I think that 127 Hours is not going to get a SAG Ensemble nomination. It's a one-man show. Yet it has every other award, too, or every other nomination.
It's hanging in very strong in a way that I have to confess to you I'm a little surprised by,
Me too. The
anecdotal evidence that so many people are resisting seeing the film.
Yeah, me too. And then
so
Inception missed with
very well.
Inception missed with SAG, but it has everything else. True Grit missed the SAG Ensemble, but I think if you held that vote now, it might get the SAG Ensemble.
True Grit is a fascinating case of a late surging picture that crested and just picked up that big wave at the end of the year, that
yep.
momentum, in a way that I have rarely seen. It reminds me a little bit of Million Dollar Baby.
Yeah,
because it just hit it perfectly. I always thought that True Grit would play well at the Academy. That wasn't the issue. But it has this huge box office push with the fact that it actually succeeded over Christmas because it was such a weak field, an unbelievably weak field. So that is going for it also. But I think the Gurus of Gold are overstating it a little bit to put it in third place. Fighters in third place.
I think Fighters in third place, yeah. I guess True Grit would be number four or five for me, maybe. I mean, but then you've got Black Swan that's dominating. You've got Kids Are All Right that's clearly well-loved.
Yeah.
There's kind of a bottleneck, I think, going on.
Well, but I put True Grit much lower on the list because I considered it to be sort of a new entrant, you know, a recent entrant. There isn't enough evidence to show how well it would, you know, without SAG, how well it would do. And, you know, it's sort of a...
Well, it'll be interesting to see if it gets a DGA nomination because you saw
that
this.
That will tell us a lot.
Well, you saw this tweet I put up. The timing on the SAG and the DGA ballots is really bizarre to me. The SAG ballots went out November 24th and were due back December 13th. The DGA ballots went out November 20th and aren't due back until January 7th.
Which favors True Grit.
Yes, it does.
Because, in fact, given that, it's likely that SAG already hurt True Grit anyway. It doesn't matter. Yeah, interesting. But that whole Haley Steinfeld question fascinates me. I mean,
can we talk about that? I have to get upset with you for a minute.
Because you think I'm wrong.
If you don't mind, I'm just going to quote. I'm going to quote you to you.
You think I'm being the thing about being greedy, huh?
Yes, it's an ensemble, and yes, she belongs in supporting. Moving her into contention for the lead smacks of greed. That is your quote.
I agree with that. I said it.
Well, of course you agree with that. That is your quote. And I am.
You can argue with me. Go ahead.
How does it smack of greed?
It has to. What I mean by that is this is what it means. They're already. The wheels are turning. It's you know, she's a first time, you know, movie actress. She's never established herself anywhere. She's 14 years old, and this is her first role.
And yet she gave one of the year's best performances, in my opinion.
And she should get nominated for best supporting actress.
Why?
She could win it for all we know.
Of course, but why?
Because she's servicing, if you like, she's working with in an ensemble. Two major movie stars established, you know, with incredibly number of years under their belt. It's an ensemble with two big movie stars, and she's a supporting actress, partly because of her age and partly because of her lack of experience.
I think all of that is nonsense.
Well, so do some of my commenters. Who agree with you 100%.
I didn't see that, but I'm just gonna ask.
That's not when I say greed. I'm not talking about her.
No, I know.
People, I'm talking about the fact that a best actress nomination is way more impactful on the box office. It is more prestige. It has more impact. And if they moved her into best act, and I think that they risk, as Tim Apollo pointed out, losing, you know, having people, you know, it's all very well for Dave Karger to say, oh, yes, you know, they can nominate her in two different categories. But people don't do that. They put her in one category or the other. And I think it's risky. I really do.
Well, regardless, they're voting her as a lead as it is. She's already splitting the vote. I think if they had come out from the beginning and said this is a lead performance in this film as it is, I think it has nothing to do with the age. I think it has nothing to do with, I mean, are you telling me what, you have to be a certain age before you're able to be campaigned as a lead? What if you give the year's best leading performance?
Keisha Castle Hughes was nominated as best actress because she was the obvious lead and the only lead in.
Well, how about Catalina Sandino Marina? One of the best performances of that year, Maria Full of Grace. Young girl.
The lead.
Did that smack of greed?
That was, she was clearly the lead. There was no, when you say smack of greed, in those cases, there was no one else to be the lead. They were the lead. In this case, Jeff Bridges is, and Matt Damon are the leads, because this has to do with Hollywood's star system. It has to do with precedent.
Which I think is bullshit. I'm talking about it. I'm talking
the
about
way
it.
People think about things. I'm not saying that Haley Steinfeld should not be, you know, considered best actress. I'm just saying at this stage, she started out as best supporting actress. That's how people are thinking of her, and it is risky to try.
I don't disagree with that. I think they're locked in, and they're locked into their bad decision. They're going to get the nomination. I think they can get the win. I'm just saying that it's just one of those things that irritates people. It's not that it upsets me. What upsets me is you saying that it would smack of greed to change it. What upsets me is to hear this idea that, oh, you have to be a certain age to be considered a true lead. I'm talking about the film on its own narrative principle.
I follow you. I get it. And I understand that she narrates the movie and that she's the lead in some ways, you know, in terms of it being her story. But this has more to do, as I said before, it has more to do with earning her stripes as an established actress.
In a way, I think that paints the Oscars as bullshit, which perhaps they are. But admitting that, I think,
but people
paints
are talking
it as the pageantry
the circuit,
it is.
And they're finding that people are saying she should be lead. I, you know, there's a great deal of affection for the Coens, a great deal of affection for this movie. I love this movie. I put it on my 10 best list. I am thrilled that it's doing as well as it is, and I think she's great. But they started out in supporting, and I think it would be risky to push for a bigger prize.
All right. Got my blood up. It's back down now. Let's talk about the WGA nominations.
Yeah. It just seems so ridiculous for them to have so many movies, you know, not eligible. It just, you know, it didn't help Winter's Bone. It didn't help, you know, for them.
King's Speech was on that list. You know, you said Please Give was probably going to get nominated. I didn't see it coming, honestly.
It was one of the best written scripts of the year. I'm delighted, but and it doesn't mean it's going to translate to the Oscars.
I think one of the best written scripts of the year was I Love You, Philip Morris. So I'm glad to see that nominated.
I hated that movie.
I know you hated it. We never talked about it either, but
that movie just rubbed me the wrong way from day, you know, from minute one. I was just like cringing.
I think it's fantastic. I think it's potentially his best performance. Speaking of which, I was just reminiscing the 1996 Saturday Night Live that Jim Carrey hosted.
Well, he's coming back.
And he's coming back this weekend. I'm so stoked. Hopefully this cast
and these writers
can... A
lot of people are
going
to watch that, because that's how they want to see Jim Carrey, in a comedic, broad setting, which he doesn't give us, you know, often enough. But the thing about, I mean, Philip, apparently what happened is that Roadside sent out screeners to every member of the Writers Guild.
Smart.
And it really paid off, and they were talking about it. They watched it, and not that many people sent them out, only like 10 people. You know, I think Pete Hammond ran the list of who actually got the screeners.
Mm-hmm.
So that.
And it's also interesting, that's the adapted screenplay category where Winner's Bone fell out, and Roadside still gets a nomination with Philip Morris. So
they were quite pleased.
Bravo.
But they should be a little worried about Winter's Bone. Although I love the idea that Catherine Bigelow is promoting it. I think that's great. She threw some screenings and is putting her weight behind it. And I hope that makes people see it. I hope they watch it as a result of that. That's the risk, is that people see Winter's Bone as, you know, it's got a very sort of dour, wintry title and a dour look. And it's actually a taut mystery thriller. It's really rather well done as a piece of hard-boiled movie making, and I don't know, I'm just afraid people think it's some piece of, you know, Sundance jury-winning granola.
That's a great phrase. Well, it did get a Scripter nomination, so let's talk about that. The USC Scripters, of which you're a member of the selection committee.
Yeah, it went pretty much the way that I thought it would. Specifically has to be, it's like looking at the adapted category. They don't look at anything that doesn't come from a literary source. Mm-hmm. So even Toy Story 3, which is adapted from, you know, other
characters,
Toy Stories, you know, is not eligible. And when you win, you know, like when Up in the Air won, it isn't just Jason Reitman and his co-writer. It's also the Walter Kern who wrote the book. And that was sort of cool to go to the event and meet the writer of the original material.
Was that the first time you had been last year?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Really? Yeah, I went 2 years ago and the year before that, and it's a blast. I'm going again this year for sure. Ghostwriter is something to talk about, though, because I do think there are people that like the movie, and obviously it's well-loved in Europe, and who knows what that crossover might do for a movie like that. Do you think it's possible that it could slide into adapted screenplay?
I think the adapted category is, you know, if you take the, if you put the lead movies back in there, it's pretty tight.
Yeah, it's tough.
I'm just looking at it right now. You'll get Michael Arndt for Toy Story 3, Joel and Ethan Coen for True Grit, Deborah Granick and Anne Rossellini for Winter's Bone. David, now the one that could fall out is Rabbit Hole. That didn't get even a WGA.
Yeah.
And it was eligible.
Yeah, but I think that one's all about Nicole.
Film.
Yeah.
You know, we loved it in Toronto. I mean, I thought that one would get in, but that could fall. And then you have Aaron Sorkin. But the other person that could get, the other movie that could come up instead is The Town, yep, or 127 Hours.
Well, speaking of Aaron Sorkin, there's this, there's things going on around town this week. We talked about the Duvall thing, which was great. I've never been to one of those things. It was kind of intimate
kind of
and fun. And yeah, it's just great. Made me feel like somebody, man. And then there's the Social Network DVD release party, which is coming at a perfect time to capitalize on that and get us all to write about it naturally. And it's going to be re-released in theaters. I mean, that campaign, it's an aggressive campaign, both in what you see and what you don't see. But I've rarely seen, you were just talking about True Grit with the timing. This movie's had the timing right every step of the way.
Well, I think King's Speech is still... They've done a masterful job with the campaign. But the King's Speech is having a party tomorrow night too. So
yeah, you just mentioned Bigelow and Winter's Bone. I mean, there's heavyweights every year that are throwing their weight behind this movie or that. King's Speech has people lining up to host screenings. It's, as we said, it's still the movie that gets people to hop up. But then you wonder about things like, is it going to get a film editing nomination? Probably not. But if it does.
No, that's the problem with Winter's Bone, is that it people think it's small, you know, and low budget.
Yeah.
You know, that's the issue for that. And it's outdoors, you know, it's another rural kind of movie.
Let's talk about 2011. That's the new year. And because you mentioned it the other day and said, let's try to talk about new movies coming up that we're looking forward to, I figured I would dig in and, I don't know, try to find something that I'm looking forward to. And it was really hard.
There are a few things.
To be perfectly honest, it was kind of a chore. The first thing, in January 21st, two movies from 2010 are getting their big releases that I really liked, so I should mention The Company Men in The Way Back. You know, I'm interested to see how Cold Weather, my friend Aaron Katz directed Cold Weather.
I like that very much.
That comes in February.
That'll be a small indie kind of title.
Hopefully IFC does well by that.
I wish people would go see The Company Men because it's so good.
It's a great movie.
It's about who we are and it's about everything that we're all going through. I just feel like that's a movie that should be on everybody's must-see list.
Mm-hmm.
And I just know that they're going to ignore it.
Yeah, I know. It's really well done.
There's nothing sexy about it, you know, and I feel like they're dumping it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's been well over a year since the Sundance Bow. So
yeah.
Or nearly a year, I guess. There's The Beaver. With Mel Gibson, of course,
Can't
we're all
wait.
Interested in that.
Can't wait.
I'm kind of interested in things like Paul.
I saw some of that, and I'm not.
Oh, really?
Even though I like Simon Pegg.
I liked the Comic-Con deal they put together this past summer. But
I like him a lot, but I it just rang I mean, I'd have to see the whole thing, you know.
Speaking of Comic-Con, there's Sucker Punch.
Can't wait.
That should be interesting. Have you seen Meek's Cutoff? Did you see that in Venice?
I liked it very much. Very much. That's my favorite of her films. And I liked Wendy and Lucy.
That's at the top of That's at the top of my list for first quarter films for sure, because it's a Western and Guy has been talking it up for months now. So,
well, I'm waiting very. I cannot wait for The Tree of Life, Terrence Malick.
Of course.
Which will be debuting in Cannes. And there's a Gus Van Sant movie debuting in Cannes. Also, I'm expected, from what I understand, called Restless, which was supposed to go to Sundance, but it's now going to go to Cannes. And that looked, I saw the trailer of that. And it also, the trailer for Tree of Life knocked me out. And I can't wait for those.
Yeah, it's
two.
A good trailer. But then you run into things, then you just hit the deluge of Thor and, oh God, Transformers and Harry Potter
when you were at Comic-Con,
Pirates of the Caribbean. I'm sorry, it's just depressing.
It's very depressing. There's Smurfs 3 and Final Destination 5 and everything. There's
Smurfs 3.
30 movies in 3D. 30.
Oh, 3D. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
You know,
and one of them is going to be a Scorsese movie.
Well, I would love to see some of these people, you know, pull back and rethink. You know, I really would.
Well, I was kind of hoping that
Warner
would happen.
As Warner Brothers did with Harry Potter. They were right. They did the right thing. And I'd like to see some of the other studios recognize that all of a sudden, even though Tron had good 3D, you know, quality films are better off in 2D.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. There's Super 8. That looks like...
That could be fun.
That could be fun. They're certainly doing a good job of...
That's the J.J. Abrams Spielberg collaboration.
Yeah. They're doing a good job of teasing that.
And speaking of Spielberg, I'm looking forward to later on in the year. I'm looking forward to Tintin. I'm looking forward to
War Horse,
and I'm certainly looking forward to, as we said, to Hugo Cabret, Scorsese's film.
Mm-hmm. The comic book stuff, like Captain America, whatever, Green Lantern. I was kind of looking forward to Green Lantern, but then the trailer, it looked like
it looks terrible.
Abin Sur looked like Wishmaster.
I think
absurd.
That of those comic book movies, Thor looks horrible. I don't feel good about Green Lantern. The one, actually, Captain America, because it's period, because it seems true to its original material, that one actually looked better to me.
You know what I'm looking forward to is Cowboys and Aliens.
I don't know. I'm a little nervous about that one. I mean,
really?
I love Favreau and I love Westerns, but there's something about putting Westerns together with Aliens that sort of, you know,
awesome.
I'm not sure. Westerns are Westerns. Period. You know,
sometimes it's okay to have a little hybridization going on, as long as it's not Jonah Hex. And they showed 10 minutes of that, of Cowboys and Aliens at Comic-Con, and it looked like a blast. So.
I was left unconvinced. I'm open, but I remain to be convinced.
Well, it's not up your alley. It's not Tiny Furniture.
Oh, come on. I love Westerns. I'm an action kid.
But you don't like Westerns combined with Aliens, so it's not up your alley.
We will see. I like action films. And
what did you think of James Cameron's Aliens? That's a combat film combined with Aliens.
I loved it. Are you kidding? But that was set in outer space. It was all legitimately... Look, they took Westerns and put them in outer space, and that made perfect sense to me. If it's a period Western and they've got Daniel Craig, you know, blasting aliens, I have to be convinced.
Just use your imagination, Anne. Come on. Well, I'm looking forward to Moneyball later in the year. I think that's going
to
be great.
I'm looking forward to that, too.
That's a Rudin thing, right?
Yep, and Bennett Miller. I look forward to that. And Brad Pitt.
And the Footloose remake. Only because it's Craig Brewer, and he's talked about how he wants to make movies that are kind of based on music genres. So, like, Hustle and Flow was his hip-hop movie. Black Snake Moan was his blues movie. And this is going to be his rock and roll movie. I think it's kind of cool. We'll see how it goes. Clearly I'm alone because you're not saying anything.
I'm fond of the original. I like Craig Brewer. I agree with you. He's edgy. He's interesting. He has good musical taste. Maybe that could work. I'm not looking forward to Harry Potter because the last one disappointed me so much.
I still haven't seen the last one. I need to see it.
It's the first time I've gone to a Harry Potter and not liked it. I was really, and my daughter reads, has read all the books and insists that that's the problem, that I haven't, you know, if I'd read the books, I would love it.
Well, it's
But
not a whole movie, right? I mean, was it just the cliffhanger nature of it that bothered you at all? I
no,
mean,
they went into incredible detail on all these different subplots and different things, and I didn't care. I just was left
well,
completely uninvested. Larry Crown could be interesting.
I
Tom
forgot about that, yeah.
Hanks. Yeah.
And
I
at the
mean,
end of the year, the big blockbuster is going to be Mission Impossible, so Ghost Protocol.
with Brad Bird directing.
Yeah.
So that makes me interested.
There's a couple of things, I guess, to pique the interest, but like I said, for the most
And
part, that
Cars
was a
too,
chore.
I would go to in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Pixar can do no wrong as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. All right,
Oh,
well.
but there's a lot of bad stuff in here. I agree. Transformers, I probably won't even go.
Yeah, you will.
Transformers, really?
You'll end up seeing it because of some story. You'll have
Maybe you're
to.
right. What about what do you think about Mr. Popper's Penguins?
That's on this list just because talking about Jim Carrey earlier, I love him to death, and even when he sucks, I pull for him. So that looks really kind of crappy to me, but I'm interested.
I loved that book. I grew up on it, and the idea of them doing this big budget, effects heavy, crazy kind of zappy movie version of it makes me crazy. I can't. I What about Spy Kids 4?
Yeah, they
No?
lost me with the last one.
Yeah. And then 3D, 2D, they all say 3D, 2D.
You're looking at the
Oy.
coming soon list, aren't
I
you?
am.
Comingsoon.net, there's your
That's
plug.
where I go. That's where I go. If I want the list of what's opening when, that's what they do. That's what
Yep,
they specialize in.
that's what their title is.
That's why I went there. But in the fall, yeah, this could be a disastrous year for the
That's
studios.
why I thought it was a chore to go through that list.
But
It's tough.
maybe Hop will be good with
What's
Russell
Hop?
Brand as the Easter Bunny.
Yeah, okay. That'll be the savior right there.
Well, it's produced by Meledandri's company, the people who did Despicable Me, which did well this week as
Oh, is it
well.
an animated movie?
Absolutely. Well,
Okay.
this one is live action mixed with
Because
anime.
I'm picturing Russell Brand wearing like an Easter Bunny
No,
costume.
he's
Okay.
animated.
Got
I
it.
think it's performance capture, actually.
How do you make
Can't
a.
believe they're making another Three Musketeers. They're out of their minds.
Yeah, it's depressing, Anne. Just get out of there. I'm telling you. Just exit out of there. It's nothing but tears in your future. Let's get to these reader questions. We got some good ones. You ready? Let's see. I'm gonna throw this one to you. Following Sparlinggate, which is obviously Chris Sparling's idiotic decision to write the Academy on behalf of his original screenplay for Buried, Michael Dalton says, "It has got me thinking about Oscar campaigning. If a film is not receiving any campaign or support from its studio, then why shouldn't those involved in the film take campaigning into their own hands? I understand he broke the rules. But as Buried was receiving no help, why shouldn't he try and get the film and his work in it recognized and remembered by the Academy?"
All right. Many actors especially have taken their own campaigns into their own hands, and what they do is they throw parties, or they throw screenings, or they take out ads, and the famous example of this is Sally Kirkland, who got herself a nomination for this movie, this little tiny independent movie called Anna. And this year, obviously, Halle Berry was trying to accomplish something like that with Frankie and Alice. But the you can't, you know, this is what happened last year with the Hurt Locker producer Nicholas Chartier, you know, who got into terrible trouble and was banned from the Academy Awards because he sent an email out to all his friends. You can't campaign directly through email on your own behalf.
There you have it.
What do you think?
Well, it's a multi-tiered question, I guess. I mean, like the guy says, he understands that the guy broke the rules. I guess he's asking, should the rules not even exist as they do? So it's a philosophical question at that point.
Well, I know. I'm saying what the rules are. I mean, they say that the guy didn't know what he was doing and didn't know any better, et cetera. But, you know, I think it's the job of the producers to and the people who are handling the Academy campaigns to educate the people who are involved, not to do that. And you should know better. I mean, look at what happened. There was so much publicity around Nicolas Chartier last year.
Yeah. Yeah, which is why it's hard to believe that someone wouldn't get those are the roles by now. I mean, in my opinion, whatever you can do in your power within those roles, sure, you should be able to take things into your own hands if you feel like you need to. I mean, because who cares, really? It's an award. So do whatever you want to try to get that award if you covet it so much. But there are rules, and there are reasons for them. Let's see. Is Christopher Nolan no longer a lock, quote-unquote, for a director's nomination? Guy is not predicting Nolan for a director's nomination. Because Guy is, you know...
Guy knows everything.
The end-all.
You know,
he knows I'm joking. Wait, let me just finish it, because he goes on to qualify it. And the gurus have Inception ranked 7th out of 10 likely Best Picture nominations. With no acting nominations likely, is Inception weaker than might have been imagined earlier in the season? Let me just address the acting thing. It's a movie that's become about the filmmaker behind the movie more than anything on screen as far as acting is concerned. You know, the driving force of the movie, the narrative of the movie is Christopher Nolan. And so, with, you know, the idea of not getting acting nominations I don't think really matters. It's all about this vision, this big, bold, very profitable vision that is original. And so it's all about Nolan. So no, I don't really think he's, I don't think the movie is weaker per se. I mean, it's always been for me in the bottom tier between 6 and 10 rather than one of potential 5 Best Picture nominees, but
I agree with that.
But I think you know, I'm you know, lock, I don't know, I don't say that word really.
I mean, it's such a well-directed movie and on such a big scale and with such extraordinary impact in terms of the visual effects and so on. And he created it, he wrote it, and delivered it. I could see director very easily happening, but is it a lock? No.
I'll just have to ask Guy next time what he thinks. Just kidding, Guy.
By the way, Inception probably does get into the top 10, even if it's not in the top 5, because of all the different craft guild, you know, branches that'll, you know, it's just got everything. Mm-hmm. Art direction, costumes, cinematography, sound, visual effects, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Two more. Away from the recommendation niceties, let's have some anti-recommendation spunk. Each of you pick 3 sure shot Oscar nominations that you, we'll do one. Sure shot Oscar nomination that you hope are snubbed or think should be snubbed. So what's in the running, totally locked in, that you think has no business being in said position?
Oh boy. Do you want to go first?
I'm still thinking too.
Well,
you know what? I can answer it, and it's not going to make you happy. I'm kind of tired of people acting like Annette Bening blew the doors off with her performance and The Kids Are All Right. It's a lock. It's in talks to be potential winner. But it was weak sauce to me, and certainly compared to her co-star, it was really nothing to write home about. It was a nice secondary portrayal that has been kind of bloated into this near tour de force. And so I would say, you know what? I don't think she should get nominated. So there. That's
me.
Whoa.
You are... yeah, I am going to... You see, I've been looking at this. Where would I go? I mean, I have to say that the very first thing that came into my mind was the Melissa Leo.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's, to me, she's just chewing the scenery in this really big way.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a huge admirer of hers, you know? So it's a question of tone. It's a question of how far David Russell, you know, pushed his actors to really, you know, go for it.
Right. On top of which...
She's competing with Christian Bale, who's like out of this world, you know?
Yeah. And on top of which, you know, to go by what they say. I mean, they're not even really fully portraying how out of control these people were as far as their personalities go. So,
yeah, no, it's an interesting case of a movie that I think is extraordinarily entertaining and you know, really fun to watch and very engaging, and you get very caught up in the characters. At the same time, that I'm not sure, you know, it seems like more of a commercial entertainment to me than a, you know, a suit, you know how that brings up the whole issue of, you know, Kids Are All Right too, because even though that's a comedy, I think the degree of difficulty is so great in that movie that it deserves everything that it's gotten. And I agree that Annette Bening is fabulous, you know, So, disagree with you. You know, The Fighter to me is a movie that, you know, a lot of people don't take as seriously as some of the other films. But
really?
that doesn't mean that it may not do really, really well, because people are very fond of it.
Mm-hmm. Last question. Do you think it is possible to watch a film at this point in the Oscar season for the first time and not let your opinion of it be influenced by all that you've read and heard about it? I've been reading a lot about how people are watching The Kids Are All Right for the first time and being very underwhelmed, including its performances. I did not mean for this to dovetail. I honestly didn't. When I saw it in theaters in the summer, I adored it, but it would be hard for any movie to live up to all the talk surrounding it with almost all the critics' awards handed out and Oscar nominations weeks away. That's from Anita. You know, I wish I could answer that question. I think the last time I saw a movie, rather unaware of things like Oscar potential, it was Heat. And if you ask me after I saw that movie in 1996 on HBO, should that be nominated for Best Picture, I would say, it's going to be nominated for Best Picture. Everybody's going to be nominated from this movie. It's the greatest movie I've seen this year, blah, blah, blah. And then, obviously, little did I know at the time how this game was played and how it worked. But I don't really know the answer to that question. Can your opinion not be influenced if you see a movie late in the season? What do you think?
A lot of people watch these movies over the Christmas holidays, and a lot of people are catching up with their screeners now.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is that all this ink, all this attention, you know, makes people decide to watch one movie over another. And that's the game. That is the game.
Right.
And sometimes I think people are underwhelmed, you know, when something has been completely overhyped. What's interesting about that is that I have not heard anyone come back and say they were disappointed by the King's Speech.
Very true. Very true. Well, we'll leave it at that.
On to the party.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.